Mayor Gordon Payton, with co-star for petition AG Northern California et al., the writer petitioner Sacramento Municipal Utility District L., Mr. Joker, who responded to the junk wire for intervener California Independent System Operating Company.
Good morning, Your Honor. Michael Postar, I will address the contract violation and jurisdiction arguments, and Mr. Ryder will address the undue discrimination and pricing issues on behalf of petitioners. I requested 2 minutes for rebuttal. I will first address the contract argument.
Is that 2 minutes just from your 10?
From mine, and Mr. Ryder has requested as well.
Okay.
The orders must be reversed because they violate the coordination agreement's prohibition against charges for parallel flows in violation of the Mobile Sierra Doctrine. Contrary to the coordination agreement, the orders allow charges for parallel flows. Power transmitted over the lines connecting California and Oregon, the three 500 kV AC lines, flow over the power flows over the high voltage lines, regardless of the destination of the power. Section 8.4 of the coordination agreement provides that there'll be no charges for such flows. The ruling that the coordination agreement does not apply when a sale is made to the California ISO reads into the coordination agreement limitations that do not exist and read out of the agreement protections that the parties plainly intended and that the California ISO is bound to honor. The rate prohibition in the coordination agreement contains no limitation that would support the ruling. Power flows to any particular market are not excluded from the scope of the agreement. The nature of the 500 kV system, large high-voltage power lines connecting the Pacific Northwest to California, means that all power coming into California from the north flows over the 500 kV lines. It then, taking in that context to the coordination agreement, we see that in 8.4, extremely broad language was written, that there shouldn't be any rate, quote, and for any power which flows over the system. Understanding the system puts into context the breadth of this provision. In addition, the course of conduct of the parties
Let me ask you, FERC focuses on the fact that 8.4 and Section 5 have to be read together, and 8.4 is limited by 5 in effect in terms of the scope of the agreement, and secondly, that the agreement doesn't say anything about how energy is priced once it enters the grid, the CAISO grid.
Your Honor, with respect to the second point, the coordination agreement provides broadly that there shall be no charges for any power flows. It doesn't define which markets are covered. It doesn't define whether it's sales or own use. It was an extremely broad agreement because in 1993, when the third high voltage transmission line was developed, the then owners decided that operating those three lines as one line, allowing power to flow as according to the laws of physics, would bring great benefits to all of the parties. And in return,
I understand the theory behind the agreement, but I just want to understand why this court shouldn't give deference to FERC's interpretation of the scope of the agreement.
The scope of the agreement.
You're saying it's plain on its face.
It's, and in fact, FERC found no ambiguity in the agreement. They simply found it doesn't apply.
Right.
The course of conduct.
That was the point I thought you were going to discuss.
Your Honor.
It doesn't say anything about how energy is to be priced once it enters the CAISO grid.
It broadly prohibits charges, and it doesn't limit to any one market where this prohibition applies. It applies broadly. And this the course of conduct under this agreement bears that out. In 1993, the California Oregon Transmission Project, basically the municipal owned line, came into being. It came under this coordination agreement. And since 1993, first from 1993 to 1998, Pacific Gas and Electric and the other investor-owned utilities sought no charges from the municipal owners, and the municipal owners sought no charges back from PG&E and the others for flows on each other's system. Now, beginning in 1998, when the California ISO came into existence, this agreement was accepted and listed in the control area agreement. It was made part of the overall agreements that the ISO would grandfather, that it would honor. And since that date, there have not been charges unique for these high voltage lines or for the low voltage lines.
Right, so CAISO comes to FERC and,
no change.
And seeks an amendment to its tariff.
In 2008.
Right.
In 2008, they seek a change to their tariff.
To change this course.
And the change to the tariff is to identify this select group of sellers from another balancing authority, and it proposes to price that power in a way that is sales into the California ISO that is inconsistent with this agreement. The pricing that they propose is a change from what was filed under the market redesign tariff that this court is well familiar with.
And the agreement providing for no charges for flows over the intertie lines suggests no charges among the three parties, doesn't it?
And the commission, first the California ISO accepted that agreement and made it part of the contracts that were recognized that it would honor. And this commission, and in fact, on brief, there's no dispute that the California ISO must honor that agreement.
Right, but the agreement is among the parties to the intertie.
It was among the parties to the intertie.
And does it not suggest that what it means is that no, there should be no charges levied by one of those three against either of the other two?
And now that agreement has effectively been included within the California ISO regime, I think that the application is necessarily broader.
The agreement was written when?
The agreement was 1993-1994 agreement, but it was amended in 2004.
To do what?
It needed to be updated because it was a contractual change between the Western Area Power Administration and Pacific Gas and Electric.
Was Section 8.4 changed?
Section 8.4 remained the same.
Right, so Section 5, was that changed?
And Section 5 remained the same.
The two provisions we're discussing were written in 93.
And they were reaffirmed in 2004 in an amendment.
When were they accepted? When was the contract accepted by the ISO?
It was upon approval by the commission. It was the amended coordination agreement was reincorporated into the control area agreement, contemporaneous. The end of 2000.
The 93 agreement also. Well, there was no ISO then, I guess.
But in the 93 agreement in 1998 was listed and included among the agreements that were grandfathered, that were accepted and honored by the ISO. And then in 2004, and I'm forgetting whether it was late 2004 or 2005, that agreement then was the amended OCOA coordination agreement was reincorporated.
Well, is there any reason it wouldn't make sense to interpret that agreement and this history as meaning only that it applies among the inter partes?
Once the ISO came about, Section 8.4 would have essentially no meaning from would provide no protection to one party to the agreement, the municipal side of the agreement, if it didn't also apply to the facilities of PG&E that had been turned over to the operational control of the ISO and incorporated within those markets.
Would it provide no protection, or it simply create an exception insofar as the flows were to PG&E's former facilities?
Well, those are the only flows that are of any benefit to the municipal utilities. The flows from the California-Oregon transmission project that flow generally over the three lines, to the extent they flow on the what's now the ISO lines, if there's no protection for those flows, there's not.
The extent they flow on the intertie.
On the intertie.
Okay.
Then there would be no protection left.
To the extent that it is Pacific Northwest Power coming in.
To the extent it's Pacific Northwest Power.
But that's not the whole of the power coming that's transmitted over those three lines.
Or power going up. The lines connect Oregon down to an area near Sacramento. They run between those two places. And there really isn't drop-off between them. There are lines that connect into them where power flows as the laws of physics, but there aren't trades that occur in between.
No drop-off?
I don't believe so. Not on the
12 substations or something like that, right? 10 for one and 2 for the other?
Well, on the California-Oregon Transmission Project, I believe that there are three major substations.
Is one at the top. Another part of the argument, I thought we were told that there are only two in the Turlock and 10 in the Smut or something like that.
That is the number of connections between the balancing authority and the California ISO. Focusing only on the 500 kV transmission line, there's only one point of interconnection with the California ISO, and that's at Tracy. So I apologize for the confusion.
And Tracy is the point of entry to the north?
Is the point of entry to the California ISO up north at Captain Jack or near Captain Jack. That's the point of entry to the Pacific Northwest.
All right, so Tracy's the opposite. It's the
right. And okay. JA 561 has a diagram of this, and in the FERC brief, addendum B2 has a more detailed diagram.
Nice color job.
I see I've run over, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Poster. We'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you.
I thought he was going to argue two issues.
I'm sorry.
I thought he was going to argue two issues.
Good morning, Your Honors. With the Court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The FERC orders approving the ISO's pricing provisions are doubly arbitrary. With respect to the pricing provisions, the Commission has approved pricing provisions that inflate prices for the power that the Turlock and Smut and other entities purchase from the ISO and depress the prices they receive when they sell into the ISO on two completely contradictory assumptions, the conflicting nature of which the Commission neither acknowledges nor attempts to explain. That alone would be grounds for finding that the agency's action was arbitrary. The conflicting assumptions are this. The Commission assumes that when Smut or Turlock, one or the other entities in this combined authority, purchase power from the ISO that's cheaper than their own generation, they'll use it to serve their own loads to displace their own generation. But when they purchase.
Let me ask you, how do you respond to the analysis in the intervener's brief supporting respondent, where they argue that the only consideration relevant to the ISO's pricing is the power flow? That's at page 24. And then on page 25, they give record sites to show that 66% of the power flows entered the ISO system through the specific AC intertie.
Yes, Your Honor. Let me directly address that question. As to the first point, that's certainly not an assumption that the Commission makes in its orders. In fact, the Commission, by endorsing the concept of a MEA, a Market Efficiency Enhancement Agreement, assumes that if the entities can establish that the generation that supplies the ISO load, it comes from within the ISO, within the balancing authority, for example, if it's SMUD generation, then you would get an adjustment to the price if you could prove that. So it plainly
that's still there, as I understand it. I thought the point of intervener's brief was FERC, absent this detailed information it doesn't have, looks at where the flows are, and over 60% of the flows are coming through.
Well, actually, I think that that's a mischaracterization. What it's saying is that when power enters in the Northwest, and it could come in at Captain Jack, it could come in at Malin, and those are two adjacent points, 66% of the power that flows over those lines would flow over the two privately owned utility lines, and one-third flows over the lines owned by the municipal utilities, and vice versa. When power is enters from the Northwest into the privately owned utilities lines, one-third of that power actually flows over the lines owned by the municipal utilities. If you look at what the commission itself has said with respect to this, first, the principal point is this, that the commission itself has acknowledged that if you could establish that the power that SMUD or Turlock actually sells into the ISO was generated by SMUD or Turlock, that you would have a different price.
And could I just ask you, when the commission says, well, Sacramento says it doesn't use this cheap power on its CAISO transactions, but rather in connections with its own customers, FERC says, well, that's not enough.
Yeah, that's interesting, Your Honor. If you look at Joint Appendix page 1373 at paragraph 162, I think it underscores the arbitrariness of the commission's assumption. The commission assumes, as did the ISO, that every single megawatt that SMUD sells into the ISO comes from the Northwest, even though it acknowledges that that's not true. They say, well, it's a reasonable assumption, but then here's what they say. Quote, paragraph 162, Your Honor. Regardless of SMUD's use of the COTP, this is the line that Mr. Postar referred to, that is, as a corridor to access additional resources to serve load, to serve SMUD's load, because that power is cheaper than SMUD's own generation, this primary purpose, again, the primary purpose is for SMUD to serve its own load, does not preclude opportunities for arbitrage price differences at intertie. It doesn't say how big those opportunities are, but it assumes that even though the primary purpose SMUD has for this generation is to serve its own load, they're going to assume nonetheless that every single megawatt SMUD sells, not despite this primary purpose, is used to serve the ISO. Yet when SMUD purchases from the ISO, it assumes that SMUD will use every megawatt to serve its own generation. That's a logical assumption because it's consistent with utility practice. It's consistent with the evidence SMUD presented, but the commission never grapples at all with the conflicting assumptions that underlie the ISO's two pricing provisions, one's for sale into and one for sale out of the ISO. The failure to address that conflict, which was presented directly to the commission on brief, on rehearing, and again before this court, it would itself be grounds for remand because of the failure of the commission to address that question.
What about its response in paragraph 163? Do you have that in front of you? JA137374. That's where it says, in response to SMUD's claim that it uses Northwest imports to serve its own load, this assertion alone is not conclusive. The original order addressed CAISO's acknowledgement that not all interchange transactions would be sourced from the specific.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. They say, well, okay, we acknowledge that not all of it does. But we're going to assume it anyway.
So, but they say that in the absence, well, I'm just trying to tie down what information it is that FERC had as distinct from what information it says it needs, because the commission says it found that in the absence of additional information, the Captain Jack default represents a conservative proxy that allows CAISO to better manage congestion. It says four.
That's a difficult one to understand because the commission refused to order a hearing. It says, well, we don't have any more information. But if you look at the prior paragraph, the commission assumes, and SMUD had presented sworn testimony on this, that when SMUD purchases power from the Northwest, its primary use, and the commission apparently assumes that that's true, is to use it to serve its own load. And the commission assumes without any evidence, based on the ISO's representation, that when SMUD purchases power from the ISO, it does in fact use that less expensive power to displace its own generation. It never explains why those assumptions wouldn't be equally reasonable to make that assumption, especially when SMUD introduced sworn testimony to that effect. Instead, it assumes that every single megawatt that SMUD sells will be originated Captain Jack and depresses the price as a result.
That's not because they have some misconception. That's because their purpose here is to preclude arbitrage.
Well, it may be that that's what they're saying, but that gets to the discrimination point, Your Honor, if I could turn to that briefly.
Well, let's stay with this for a moment. You're saying they didn't give you a logical explanation, and
right.
They've said, look, we're trying to prohibit arbitrage, so we're essentially assuming, we know it's not going to be true for them in many cases, we're assuming that you buy high and sell low.
They haven't said why that would be logical, especially given the opposite assumption when Smut purchases from the ISO. Presumably, they'd have the opportunity to do that into the Northwest as well. They've never grappled with that conflict, nor have they grappled with the fact that Smut is purchasing less expensive generation from the Northwest. The logical use would be to displace its own more expensive generation to serve its own load.
Right, not to engage in gaming.
We don't have all the information that would be necessary, and not for this rulemaking, but all in the course of operating the ISO as well. We don't have all the information about what you're actually doing, right? You all have that information, and they say, I know you object to this, but as at the adequacy of this, but they say, well, you can go form a MIA if you don't like this. However, short of forming a MIA, is there any reason you couldn't have given them the information?
Well, we did present testimony, Your Honor. The commission refused to hold a hearing on it. We did present testimony that that's, in fact, what we've done. Now, through several iterations the commission has had with compliance filings, it looks like a MIA may actually get approved by the commission after four rounds of compliance filings. That may
moot an aspect of this case?
It wouldn't moot it. It would certainly ameliorate the impact on entities like SMUD and Turlock. We still would be distinguished from other balancing authorities who don't have to face that burden. It also
That's
doesn't.
That's your discrimination point.
Yes. Yeah. And if I could, I'd like to just turn to that briefly. The commission predicates its discrimination approval of the commission of the pricing mechanism as not unduly discriminatory on the predicate that SMUD and Turlock, who are even combined are smaller than most of their neighbors, somehow have a greater impact on the ISO than anyone else. SMUD and Turlock had maintained to the commission that the concern that the ISO had about the ability to engage in scheduling manipulation was one that would exist with any entity that connected to the ISO, and there are lots of them, that had more than one scheduling point. And the commission says, well, these two combined have the biggest impact. But if you look at what the commission itself says in its rehearing order, it says, and I'm looking at Joint Appendix 1345 at paragraph 69, while the exact magnitude of loop flows exclusively attributable to imports from the SMUD-Turlock Balancing Authority may not be knowable, given the flow data currently available. So they don't know the magnitude. The commission says that.
Although you all do.
Well, I think we and the ISO know the magnitude, but not the relative magnitude compared to other balancing authorities
sure,
that they say are greater.
If you were to give them the magnitude, they could find out. Right?
Well, So they'd have to get that magnitude from all the neighboring balancing authorities to decide who, in fact, had the largest impact. But here's what the commission says. Loop flows do occur, and even if exaggerated, because the commission couldn't decide, because it decided not to hold a hearing, as to whether the ISO's claims about magnitude, not relative magnitude, but magnitude were exaggerated, the existence of loop flows alone justifies the IBA's existence. Well, I think that proves the discrimination point, Your Honor, because the commission and the ISO agree that loop flows are a phenomenon that exists with respect to every balancing authority to which the ISO is connected. You look at joint appendix pages.
Which paragraph are you quoting from?
Paragraph 69. The existence of loop flows alone justifies the IBA's existence, it says. But the loop flows are ubiquitous. The commission has said so. The ISO has said so. If loop flows, regardless of magnitude, were a justification for formation of an IBAA, that factor would not distinguish SMUD and Turlock from anyone else.
That was only one of five factors.
Well, the other factors the commission has essentially walked away from. The commission has...
Where did they walk away from?
Well, if you look, for example, Your Honor, at the number of interconnections, we said, well, the number of interconnections doesn't make any difference because they could all be small. You have a tiny entity that happens to have lots of small lines connected, and they're not going to have much of an impact. So the commission says, oh, well, some of the interconnections are large, but there aren't any. They don't say that they're any larger than the interconnections that the ISO has with Bonneville, for example.
When you sell power into the ISO, Are there other IBAAs that are located in such a way that they're in competition with you for that sale?
Well, there are other balancing authorities that are connected to the ISO that sell power into the ISO, certainly.
But do they, are they selling in competition with you? If they're selling into the San Diego market.
Well, they sell into the ISO grid. So, yes, we're all selling into the same ISO market, whether it's Los Angeles, Arizona Public Service, Sierra Pacific, the Comisión Federal de...
So if you supply, if you from the ISO's point of view, I just want to make sure I understand this, it may be that they, there's a choice of taking power from the from you coming from the Northwest and shifting loads south as opposed to taking power from Arizona to supply San Diego.
I don't think so. I think they accept all bids into the market.
Then you may not be in competition with any other IBAA.
Well, the prices at which we offer the power affect whether our bids will be accepted into the market.
Yeah, but you may be competing not with other balancing authorities, isn't that right?
Well, with the entities within those balancing authorities. I mean, the balancing authorities themselves don't compete. Yeah. It's the utilities located within them that do.
Is every utility in one or another?
Yes. SMUD, Turlock, Modesto, for example, are in the balancing authority that, that the commission cobbled together, the Turlock and Modesto.
But moving south from there, is every utility in the ISO
or in
part
a,
of a balancing authority?
Or in a neighboring balancing authority. For example, Imperial Irrigation District has its own, Los Angeles has its own, Arizona Public Service has its own balancing authority.
Because they have multiple generation facilities?
Yes, they have generating facilities located within their borders.
Multiple ones, so they're balancing?
There are multiple interconnection points for virtually all of these entities, balancing authorities, that, that are adjacent to the ISO. Some have more interconnections than others. Some interconnections are much larger than other interconnections. Bonneville, for example, is the largest of the entities that connect to the ISO. And we had presented testimony that the impact of parallel flows from that entity would have had a much bigger impact than the cobbled together impact of SMUD and Turlock, which are relatively small.
So the argument comes down to the notion that, not comes down to, but it entails the notion that by assuming, as they do, the pricing points for your power coming into the ISO, they will not make purchases from you because there will be lower price suppliers, but that's only because of the artificial assumption about your price.
No, I thought that they wouldn't make price.
Your locational marginal price.
It's not so much that they wouldn't make purchases from us, but that the price at which they would pay us would be depressed. Now, that will have two effects. Either we make less money because...
But that's not a discrimination issue. That's a reasonable price issue.
No, I think it's the discrimination issue is that SMUD and Turlock have been singled out for this particular pricing mechanism prior to the existence of the...
I understand that, but unless that has some competitive effect on you, it's not really terribly relevant, is it?
Well...
You said it depresses your prices, but you've made a separate argument on why that's unreasonable.
But we're the only one to whom that price-depressing mechanism applies. Every other balancing authority connected to the ISO gets the locational marginal price
What is the disadvantage to you of that?
Well, the differential between the Captain Jack price, for example, and other points of interconnection between the SMUD balancing authority and the ISO can be significant during periods of congestion. So that results in a lower price. All other balancing...
I understand that. The lower price is the problem.
But the other balancing authorities get prices based on their point of interconnection with the ISO, the closest point of interconnection to the ISO. If SMUD and Turlock got that, their prices would be higher. So the pricing distinction created only for this balancing authority is what creates the discriminatory impact. I see that I've...
I see your point, but let me just make sure that it's also true that if you won on the pricing point, the discrimination issue would be moot.
I think that's right, Your Honor.
Likewise, if you won on the discrimination issue, the pricing point, the pricing issue would be moved.
Yes. If we got to price at the point of interconnection, we'd be treated like all the other balancing authorities, and I think that effectively would moot the issue as well.
And so would it be? So would extension of this to the other balancing authorities?
No, Your Honor. This is not a case of misery loves company, because in that case, the reasonableness of the proxy pricing mechanism would adversely affect us and everybody. It may be that it's not discriminatory, but everybody would be treated equally poorly.
It would leave your price point, yes. But it would eliminate the discrimination.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
You'd actually used all your time before I used the rest of the time you didn't have, but we'll give you a minute for review.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. Well, first of all, Mr. Ryder is incorrect that the commission did not have evidence about both the proxy price for this balancing area and about the flows coming from the Pacific Northwest that caused the problem that led to the creation of this balancing area. The Captain Jack price, the commission cites evidence specifically at paragraph 83, which is JA 875. There was a study done that discusses why this is a problem. As far as comparing the it's in the footnote. It's discussed in the footnote, but it's discussed other places as well.
Is this the first order?
First order.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then it's discussed in the rehearing order as well. The other evidence that Mr. Ryder is ignoring, it goes to the discrimination issue, and that is that the commission specifically relied on record evidence that indeed Sacramento and Turlock taken together did have greater parallel flows. This is the Appendix A to ISO's Exhibit 1, which is cited in several places in the order, including in the first order, paragraphs 220, 221, and footnotes there. It's JA 1393. And in the rehearing order.
1393 is the rehearing order, isn't it?
I'm sorry, that is the rehearing order. And what the commission says there, it cites it earlier, but what it says there is specifically that
paragraph again, I'm sorry.
Paragraph, I would look at 220.
220, okay.
220 discusses the Appendix A data, and the Appendix A data is found at, it's in the joint appendix at 201 to 212. And it says Sacramento did not address this long-term data. Instead, it focused on other data that was for a more limited period. So there is substantial evidence here, both for the Captain Jack price and to distinguish Sacramento and Turlock from all the other balancing areas.
Are you focusing on the sentence that says the data documents the amount and frequency of unscheduled flows?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where's the reference to the underlying data?
It's a footnote 162. It's cited specifically.
And that's also at JA what?
That's it. Also at JA 201 to 212. And the commission said it applied its expert knowledge to that data, and it agreed with the California ISO that that's what that data meant, and that Sacramento never really responded to that. When you look,
but in their brief, even taking these facts as established, they do challenge the relevance and sufficiency of these findings. That is to say, that the amount, as I recall, their argument is that the amount and frequency don't really tell you anything you need to know or what you need to know about the power flows, because it doesn't give you the I think it gave you only peak loads, actually.
Well, I think that's the argument about the flow reversals. And the commission said there was certainly evidence that there were significant power flows, and that was a crucial point, that this was a problem. And in fact, in terms of looking at the Captain Jack price, agency was really relying on a couple different things. There was evidence of these power flows. There was, as well, the knowledge and experience that the cheap power, everybody in the industry knows this, is in the Pacific Northwest and is going to be sold down in California. And there were even admissions in at JA 1334 in the rehearing order, paragraph 36, several of the parties who didn't pursue an appeal admitted that that's where their power is coming from. So there's there was really no question that the unscheduled flows are coming from there. There's certainly substantial evidence. And what the commission said, well, we have different factors here. We know there are a lot of flows coming from there. And the other key factor is that Sacramento and Turlock were uniquely integrated into the California ISO in a way that no other balancing authority is. And that's why we actually included our color map, because you can see it's embedded in the balancing authority, those two balancing areas. Which is,
what exactly is the relevance of that?
It shows that they are uniquely integrated.
I understand that. What's the relevance of being uniquely integrated?
We're talking about locational marginal pricing. With locational marginal pricing, the source of the power becomes important. So as Mr. Rothletter and Price, the California ISO expert, said, the key to whether there's a problem is location. Nobody else, and the commission cites that testimony and says, no other balancing authority is in a location that has the same situation.
Well, that's true of any two balancing authorities.
Because they're integrated together as well as being integrated with the ISO. And there was testimony by the ISO that nobody else was like that. When you look at Mr. Ryder says they presented evidence that went the other way. Actually, when you look at Dr. Alawan's evidence, which I think what he's talking about, he just says, he mentions Bonneville, and he just says, well, I can't believe Bonneville doesn't also have an impact. But it's very conclusory, whereas the commission was relying on the ISO evidence, which was actually quite detailed.
Where's that? You quoted this in your brief, as I recall.
Your Honor?
The Alawan testimony? Was it not? Maybe it was in the.
They might have quoted
their
it.
Their brief, yeah.
But, okay. But when you look at
then
it.
But you responded to it. Where is your response to that?
On 32, we say the commission specifically addressed the only actual evidence cited by municipals, and that the flow data in this is not Appendix A. This is the other charts about flow data, and they argued about the flow reversals. And he said, and we said, we have reviewed the data presented by Sacramento and find that there were still hundreds of megawatts in differences between the scheduled natural flows at Cottonwood and the combined Rancho Seco and Lake substations, as indicated by the California ISO's evidence. So I think that mostly went to the flow reversals, but there's also this other evidence in Appendix A that was never attacked, as far as the commission found. So, you have the degree of integration between the two balancing authorities with the ISO, and you have the evidence, and we think that was a reasonable basis on which to say that, yes, the Sacramento and Turlock areas should be priced differently. Of course, they have the option of saying...
One second. That doesn't establish that they're different from other balancing authorities, does it?
But the testimony says that they're unique, uniquely integrated.
I understand that, but the hundreds of megawatts in differences between scheduled and actual flows.
If you look at Appendix A to ISO 1, that's what those charts show, that there is more flow, unscheduled flow, from that balancing those two balancing authorities than the other balancing authorities. So it's specifically evidence on the point you're talking about, Judge Ginsburg, and that it's actually cited by the commission.
Just the evidence that the petitioners described as some bell curves?
Yeah, suddenly in the brief, they decided to say something about it, and they say, well, it's just bell curves. Well, I'm not an engineer, but The commission's engineers looked at it and agreed with the California ISO's experts that, yes, these bell curves do show a substantial divergence in flow, and what this means is that there's much more parallel flow coming from Sacramento and Turlock than from the other balancing authorities.
Where are those charts?
201 of the joint appendix. And I think what's crucial is, until we came to court, we didn't really hear much talk about these at all. And in fact, the commission made a finding in the rehearing that SMUD doesn't seem to really respond to this data. And that's, you know, specifically in the rehearing order.
A bunch of somewhat cryptic and to the uninitiated abbreviations at the head of each of these charts. What are they?
They're the different balancing areas. For example,
is a balancing
on page 202, BPA is the Bonneville power.
208 is SMUD.
Right. I mean, believe me, these charts, you know, doesn't leap out from these charts when I look at them, but the commission's applied its expertise and relied on the expert testimony, and that's really enough for substantial evidence to support the commission's view here, which is what we're talking about.
Well, there's some apparent differences between the SMUD chart and any of the others, but their meaning is completely...
They're meaningless unless you read the testimony on which the commission relied. The testimony which the commission relied in ISO 1, and it's all in the joint appendix, specifically explains what these charts mean. And then the commission both looked at the explanation, looked at the charts, applied its own expertise and found that these charts did indicate that problem, along with the explanation. I will say the charts are in the original record; they're in color, makes them a little easier to see. Although I don't think it necessarily reveals their inherent truths, just because they're in color.
So, is FERC agreeing with the intervener's explanation that the intended ultimate use of the energy they purchase is irrelevant, that we're looking at the flows?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And, you know, the argument that about the use, I agree with Mr. Ryder that it was mentioned on rehearing, it was mentioned below, but it was only became the focus at the time in the briefs before this court. So the commission dealt with all the issues fairly extensively. It didn't address this specific point. It certainly recognized, and there are places in the orders where it talks about flows are what's important, and it's the whole underlying basis of the order. So it's certainly addressed, but it's certainly a reasonable way of looking at it, and it's, I think, the way the commission was looking at it. There's nothing else on that. In terms of the contract, no further questions on the discrimination or price issues. In terms of the contract, as the commission said, and Judge Ginsburg pointed out, this, and Judge Rogers, this is an operating, it's an operating agreement. It doesn't govern pricing. The commission reasonably construed it looking at the operating agreement as a whole. The idea that it's not ambiguous, I think, is, I mean, the commission didn't use the word ambiguous, but if you look on in the rehearing order, paragraph 255, where we discuss that, we specifically say the integrated balancing tariff doesn't conflict with this agreement when both are read in complete context. You can't look at the operating agreement, which is indeed in the record, in the joint appendix at 577 to 633, and it's about operating these systems, and figure out what the rates are. Petitioners say, well, it says that the parties can't charge each other for unscheduled flows, and the commission specifically answered that. The ISO tariff doesn't set a rate for unscheduled flows. It sets a rate strictly for scheduled flows. The congestion charge does take into account unscheduled flows, and the commission said that's a different thing. The idea of the history...
By scheduled flows, you mean all day ahead sales?
I mean, flows that are actually agreed to. Day ahead, hour ahead.
Oh, there's hour.
Is hour ahead too?
Discussed in here.
Well, then, nobody's much worried about that in this context. The argument was mostly about day ahead, but there is hour ahead as well.
And is there a spot market shorter than hour?
Yes, there is. Scheduled flows are what's scheduled under the transmission tariffs. And the power that we're talking about here isn't free. I mean, there are still rates governed by transmission tariffs, as the commission pointed out, for the power coming over the California Oregon system. And what the commission said was, to the extent that this document says no parallel flows shall be paid for, we weren't doing that. There was ISO was strictly setting a rate for the scheduled flows. Petitioner also argues that somehow the fact that the commission made a loss adjustment under this tariff somehow conflicted with that. I didn't hear it today, but it's certainly a major part of their brief. I think the commission answered that quite reasonably. The loss adjustment was under the transmission tariffs, Western's transmission tariff and Northern California's transmission tariff, that cover the system. It wasn't under the coordinated operating agreement.
So do you have anything that, that we wouldn't want to miss, even though your time is up?
I don't think so. Unless Your Honor has a question about jurisdiction, we think that the Sacramento case addressed.
I'm sorry. Hearing none?
Hearing none.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Dan Schonkweiler on behalf of the interveners supporting FERC. I'm going to try to supplement Mr. Soper's answers to some of your questions with additional record sites and also try to shed light on the curves in the joint appendix that you asked about. A couple of the questions went to the Commission's response to the petitioner's arguments about the various data about power flows. And I want to point you to JA pages 859 to 861, which is the initial order, but it's a place where the Commission addresses the arguments about the power flow studies, and it's outside the discrimination section. So if you were just reading that caption section, you might miss some of those issues. One of the issues they address in particular is the contention that, geez, some of these studies are only during the peak week, and it's not uncommon at all for utilities to study the peak week because we need to operate 52 weeks a year, 24/7. So that's a common practice. The Commission addressed that.
Peaks are terribly relevant for some things. Why is that what's relevant here?
It's relevant to reliability issues. There are three different issues. There's a gaming concern, an arbitrage concern, and a reliability concern about having to redispatch power to address unanticipated flows.
I thought the gaming and the arbitrage were one and the same.
You could look at them that way, but they're specific. The one way to look at the arbitrage point is, you find the right site.
But whether they're one or two distinct matters, you're distinguishing them from
reliability, which peak would be relevant. In addition, also related to the data issues, in addition to the sites that Mr. Soper provided, he cited you to the curves at JA 201 to 212. I'd also point you to JA 156 to 159, where there's some testimony addressing the other balancing authority areas. I'd also point out that the rehearing order at JA 1393 to 1394, in particular paragraph 223, the commission addresses why it's not necessary to model the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, which is one of the neighboring balancing authority areas, in the same way we're modeling Sacramento and Turlock. And they took that issue on there. And that is the balancing authority area with the next greatest number of interconnections.
Where's that appear?
That's my notes say JA 1393 to 1394, paragraph 223.
We just looked at that.
Right, that's right. It's in the neighborhood. A second point about discrimination, it's something that's throughout the record. It's not in any particular place, but this, to be clear, this is not This tariff amendment is not about schedules by any particular utility. It's about interchange schedules with a balancing authority area. And so it could be anyone scheduling out of that balancing authority area. There are transmission rights down the COTP that can be sold to regulated public utilities in the Northwest. Third, Judge Rogers, you asked about, you asked both counsel about the commission's or our statement that this is about power flows. It's not about the intended use of the power. I would say there are many sites in the record that show the commission was specifically focused on power flows. Let me find my right place here. I'd point you to, in the initial order, to JA 862, paragraph 44, JA 874, paragraph 82, JA 878, paragraph 90, in the rehearing order, JA 1334, paragraph 35, JA 1343, paragraph 64, and JA 1374, paragraph 163. My take on this is, I wouldn't disagree with that it's the internal policy or perhaps the accounting practice of those districts to focus on their intended use of the power, but their accounting or their internal policies don't affect the power flows, and that's what's important here. There was reference to the fact that the market efficiency and enhancement agreement just became available recently, or there was an order that made it available. I don't want there to be any inference that the market efficiency enhancement agreement wasn't available earlier.
I thought the statement was that it was that an agreement had been reached. Would it be going into effect soon? Is that not what it was?
I defer to whatever. This is not my area.
There have been several rounds of compliance filings. The commission rejected the ISO's NEA tariff provision several times. The last one hasn't yet been approved, but it appears that
pending. Okay. All right. Thank you.
But it was the commission. There's a record item 131, which is not in the joint appendix, where the commission found specifically that the market efficiency enhancement agreement was available when our new market began. So I wouldn't want that inference to be reached. As to the charts at JA 120 and 121, or the curves, there are two things to see there. I can shed some light on these. If what the curve shows vertically are the number of, let's see, is it JA 120? 201, I'm sorry, that's the JA 201 to 212. And there's a curve for each balancing authority area and a curve there for each point of intertie. What the...
Which page are we on? Should be on?
Let's pick JA 201, which has two curves.
Okay.
The question of where the curve is placed horizontally, that is, so let's look at the curve that sort of straddles the center axis, shows the accuracy of the schedules. How close is the actual power flow to the schedule? What you see vertically in terms of how spread out the curve is, and you can look, there's a lower spread out curve on the right there, has to do with predictability. That shows that what you're dealing with are unscheduled flows that are all over the place. And what I understand is it's one thing to deal with something that's either accurate or predictably inaccurate. I could show you a predictably inaccurate curve if you went to 206, JA 206. There's a curve on the right that's very high and very narrow, but it's so that's predictable but slightly inaccurate. And it's quite another thing to deal with what you're looking at in the Sacramento and Turlock balancing authority area in 208, where you've got curves that are both spread out and off-center. That means they're unpredictably inaccurate. And you've also got to consider there's a spread out curve also for Turlock on JA 211. I see I'm over my time, so if there are any other questions.
You've given us the notion of predictably inaccurate, which is a useful supplement to the notion of Unknown unknowns.
Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to address one point on our rebuttal with respect to the contract argument. The Commission's interpretation must be reasonable. When PG&E turned its facilities over to the operational control of the ISO, the ISO, in a sense, stepped into PG&E's shoes with respect to the accepted existing grandfathered agreements. What the ISO did from 1998 through 2009, when it operated its markets, was to not charge the municipal utilities for the power flows over the path that we've been talking about, the path from Oregon down to Sacramento. And now, in 2009, they turn around and say, oh no, we can interpret this contract to allow us to charge for those flows. We can charge for those flows when you schedule to sell to us. Well, we scheduled to sell to them before, but now when we schedule to sell to them, you can't. And the one point I'd like to make is that we don't schedule a single megawatt over California ISO facilities from Oregon down to where our facility terminates. But that's the path where they're charging us using Captain Jack. That's the path that they want to charge us for these parallel flows, for congestion and for losses. So even though we schedule, we don't use that path. We don't use their facilities. And so the schedule is not over their facilities. It's over our facilities in a separate balancing authority, which really distinguishes, you know, for other purposes. This is very different from Sacramento. Sacramento, is a very different
case. That's part of what caused them to eliminate one of the charges.
Well, what they didn't actually eliminate, Your Honor, and in fact, there's in the order, there's some language, there's some confusion. What the commission allowed is, if a municipal utility can show that it's paying duplicative charges, it can avoid that charge. The charge is still on the book. The charge hasn't been eliminated. It's the losses charge is still there. But if we can show that we're paying duplicative charges, then we wouldn't pay it. And no municipal utility so far has stepped forward and said, I'm making that showing. So the losses charges...
Is that a showing that's somehow impractical to make?
It hasn't been made to date.
Okay, well, maybe it's because there's no duplicative charge. And the congestion part, they just left in place, right?
Well, we think there is a duplicative charge, but if there is not, then they are charging us on the 500 kV facilities. The losses charges, the order expressly finds, was for flows on the 500 kV system. And the commission said because it's on the 500 kV system, not because of the coordinated operation agreement, because of Western, we're not going to allow that charge. Well, the charge is still on the book. So the basic point is that the reasonableness of the contract needs to be looked at. The fact that we could schedule before but not pay this charge, but we now have this unique IBA filing that's been made, and now when we schedule, we are assessed this charge. That should go to their reasonableness. And I've used up more than my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
A couple of very brief points, Your Honors. The Commission referred to the unique nature of the SMUD-Turlock combination, but the sole justification that the Commission offered and that the ISO offered for this combination was that SMUD could schedule through Turlock to the ISO, and Turlock could schedule through SMUD to the ISO. But Turlock pointed out in a rehearing that didn't make them unique because there were lots of neighboring balancing authorities that could schedule through each other to the ISO. The Commission never responded to that argument at all. With respect to the relevance of peak data, off-peak, there is no pricing differential between Captain Jack and Tracy. So peak data is, I think, as you indicated, Judge Ginsburg, critical. And the Commission apparently didn't find the ISO, or at least couldn't conclude that the ISO's evidence on the relative impacts of flows was conclusive. In fact, as I pointed out, at JA 1345 at paragraph 69, Commission says that this information may be exaggerated and that the existence of loop flows alone justifies the IVAA's existence. With respect to the the charts that the commission cites, the commission, interestingly, never says anywhere with respect to the charts or with any respect to any other evidence that the flows on SMUD or Interlock systems have a greater impact on the ISO than anyone else's. They say that there are parallel flows, but parallel flows alone don't distinguish them. If you look at the charts themselves, there are two axes. One is frequency of unscheduled flows, and the other is the unscheduled flow as a percentage of limit, percentage of the interconnection. Well, you have every one of these entities has unscheduled flows that are frequent, but you can't tell the size of the interconnection. So an unscheduled flow on a tiny line doesn't have much impact. There's no way to tell from these charts, and the commission never actually claims in its orders that the impact from SMUD and Turlock unscheduled flows was any greater than the impact of unscheduled flows that plainly exist on all these other interconnections. I see I've used up my time, and unless the court has any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ryder. Close time, Mr. Sucker. Thank you all. Case is submitted.